only going to talk about problems arising from the standard model itself as a theory, and whether it's a satisfactory theory or not. So the first problem that I want to discuss in some detail is neutrino masses. And in a sense, this is the most pressing problem with everything that I've discussed so far, because we know experimentally that neutrinos do have mass. And so the fact that I wrote down the standard model Lagrangian without neutrino masses is problematic. So they're massless in the standard model, which only has the left-handed neutrino fields. But they're observed to have a small non-zero mass, which is less than an EV. So there are kind of two questions. How do we include neutrino masses in the Lagrangian? And also, why are they so small? Why are they much, much smaller than every other type of mass, the mass of every other particle in the standard model? Okay. The most straightforward way that you might want to follow to include neutrino masses in the Lagrangian is to just write down a Yukawa term for the neutrino fields. So you would introduce So the first thing is that you need some right-handed neutrino fields in order to pair up with the left ones. So you need to introduce right-handed neutrino fields new right I. So there could be three. There actually could be two. That's consistent as well. But let's suppose that there are three. So then you would write down another Yukawa interaction, this time for the neutrino fields, the indices I and J, nu right I, left-handed lepton doublet J, and then transpose acting on the SU2 indices, and then I contract it with epsilon and the Higgs field H. So all of this, remember, is acting on the SU2 indices plus Hermitian conjugate. And then when I expand the Higgs field in a unitary gauge, I get the following. I get nu right I times a matrix y nu I j over square root of 2 times the VEV, and then nu left j, and then 1 plus h over v plus Hermitian conjugate. Okay, so we need to go through exactly the same song and dance as we did for all the other fermions. We need to diagonalize the mass matrix, which is just this y times v over square root 2, using a biunitary transformation. Down mass eigenstate fields. So this is the same field I wrote over here. Then I want to define the mass eigenstate fields, which I'll write as nu j prime with some unitary matrix, which I'll call u, ij. And okay, there's a different matrix for the right-handed and left-handed neutrino fields. And so when I do this transformation to diagonalize this matrix, I just get minus m nu I nu bar I nu I prime. And then 1 plus h over v. Okay, so these are the mass eigenstate fields. And this would be the original basis. So now that we've diagonalized the neutrino fields with their own rotation matrix, we run into the same problem for the charge current interaction that we had for quarks, namely it's no longer diagonal for leptons. So the charge-current interaction is now takes the following form: g over square root 2, a matrix U star j I, and then I have nu bar left prime I gamma mu e prime left j, where this matrix U is equal to U dagger E left, U nu left. And then I have a W mu, and this must be W minus. Okay, and then let me write down the Hermitian conjugate term. Bar prime left J, gamma mu, nu left I prime, W plus mu. And this must be, this must involve U J I. Okay. So these two things are not equal to each other. They're two unitary matrices multiplied together. They give you a unitary matrix U. So this is the analog of the CKM matrix, but for leptons, it's called the PMNS matrix, named after Pontecorvo, Maki, Nakagawa, and Zakata. Okay, so you could stop there and declare that we are done introducing neutrino masses, but it's not quite the end of the story. Because I just want to remind you the philosophy of the standard model, right? We want to write down all possible terms in the Lagrangian that are consistent with gauge symmetry and renormalizability. Okay, so let's think if we still have satisfied that. Okay, so these interactions, of course, are satisfy gauge symmetry and renormalizability, but we're not done. So, so the new right I field has SU3 color times SU2 left times U1 y quantum numbers of singlet under color, singlet under SE2 left, and then it does not carry any hypercharge. Hypercharge is zero. So it's a singlet under the standard model gauge symmetry. So there's another mass term we could write down, which is just a Majorana mass for the new right fields. So it takes the following form. It looks like this. So there's a 1/2. If I have three generations, it'll be some matrix Mij. And then I have nu bar right I, nu right C, plus nu bar right C I, nu right J. And this should have a J. So the C I wrote down is charge conjugation. And just to be clear with my notation, when I write down nu right C, what I mean by this is take the new right fields and act with the charge conjugation operator. So it just means take your neutrino field, project out the right-handed component, and then charge conjugate it. I don't mean the following, which is the right-handed projection of the charge conjugation of the neutrino field, just to be clear, okay? So these two things don't commute. And the notation's a little bit kludgy, just because I'm trying to write it all out in four-component notation. It's a lot simpler if you write it out in two-component notation. So if you're familiar with that, I recommend it, but we're not going to do it. So let's explore some of the consequences of introducing this extra term. And for simplicity, let's just consider one flavor. So the neutrino mass terms take the following form. I have a term here, which is the Dirac mass. Where m is equal to y times v over square root of 2. And then I also have this extra term for the Majorana mass, so I'll write it as 1/2 m. And then I have nu bar right, nu right c, plus nu bar right c, nu right. Yeah.
The Majorana mass then does it also confirm the Higgs mechanism?
It doesn't need to. So I don't need to put in the Higgs field. The only reason I needed to put in the Higgs field for the Dirac term is to generate a mass in a way that broke SU2 cross U1 spontaneously. Here I don't need to worry about that because the fields are all singlets. I can just write down a mass term by hand. But this mass could come from some other VEV of some other fields, but doesn't need to. So we have two different mass terms, and I want to just rewrite them in a different way. So I can write them as a matrix expression. where we have new left C, new right bar, and then 0, M, M, capital M, and then new left, new right C, plus summation conjugate. OK? So if you expand out this matrix expression, you'll get exactly this. You have to use, you have to remember certain identities, which is that if you write down new right bar, new left, this is equal to new bar C left, new right, and new bar left, new right is just equal to new bar right C, new left. OK, so if you use this, you can expand out this and show that it's equal to that. So we have a mass matrix, and therefore we want to diagonalize it to get the mass eigenstates. So what we'll have are the mass eigenstates will be 2 Majorana fermions. Which I'll call just nu and n. So once you diagonalize, and I just mean, you know, okay, find the eigenvalues and eigenvectors of that matrix, the neutrino mass term takes the following form. There's a Majorana mass term for the new field, like this. And then there's a Majorana mass term for the N field. So here, again, I'm writing it in four-component notation. So when I write nu, what I really mean is, this is a four-component Majorana field. And it's approximately the same thing as the left-handed fields. And the n is approximately the same thing as the right-handed fields. In the limit, that the mass is much, much greater than the Majorana mass, capital M is much, much greater than little m. Why should we think about this limit? Well, one of the reasons is that if I generate the Dirac mass through the Higgs-Vev, which is what I have to do, I'm kind of limited in terms of how large that mass term could be. I can't have a mass, a Dirac mass, that's much larger than a top quark without having my Yukawa coupling be non-perturbatively large. Okay, so if I want to stay in the limit of a weakly coupled theory, then the Dirac mass term is limited. Can't be more than around 100 or so GeV. The Majorana mass doesn't have to be limited in that way. It could be much larger. Or it could be much smaller. But let's consider the case in which it's much larger. Okay. So in this limit, then the mass eigenstate fields are approximately the same thing as just the fields that I wrote down above. And the corresponding eigenvalues are as follows. So the mass of the mostly right-handed state is approximately just this parameter m. But the interesting point is that the mass of the neutrino state, the mostly left-handed neutrino state, it's given by m squared divided by capital M. Okay, and again, it just follows from taking the eigenvalues of that matrix. So this formula here in this mechanism to generate neutrino masses in this way is known as the seesaw mechanism. Okay? So the issue that we're trying to solve is the question of why are the neutrino masses so light? They're light because perhaps this scale, capital M, is very, very large. So it's not that we have a Dirac mass that's very, very tiny. The Dirac mass could be comparable to other Dirac masses in the standard model, but the new feature here is that we're dividing by some extra heavy scale, which is the scale of these right-handed neutrinos. So this is the seesaw mechanism. Neutrinos are light. Because the singlet right-handed neutrinos, N, are very heavy. So for example, in here, I'm just going to pick numbers out of a hat. So let's say that y times v was 1 GeV. So that means that y is around 0.01. And we take this heavy scale to be 10 to the 9 GeV. And you put this together, it gives you the mass of a neutrino, left-handed neutrino, to be 1 EV. Okay, so that's roughly in the same ballpark as we want for these neutrinos. So again, we're taking reasonable values of the Dirac mass, comparable to, let's say, the charm quark or the tau. But it's because of this very heavy scale that we're able to get very light neutrinos. If you had just thrown away this extra term in the Lagrangian, so you would say there's no Meyer on a mass term for n, we just have Dirac neutrinos, the same way we have Dirac charged leptons. So this is where capital M is equal to 0. Then we need to have the Yukawa coupling Y less than around 10 to the minus 12 to get the neutrino masses less than around 1 eV. So the issue, if you have Dirac neutrinos, is just the question of why are the Yukawas for the neutrinos so small compared to all of the other Yukawas? And of course, the standard model does have small Yukawa couplings. The Yukawa for the electron is something like 10 to the minus 6 or 10 to the minus 5. But this is way, way, way smaller than that. So I just want to mention very briefly some experimental consequences. The first thing is neutrino oscillations. And these occur independent of whether neutrinos are Majorana or Dirac. So there are different ways to see neutrino oscillations. One is to make a neutrino beam. To make a neutrino beam, you just collide protons on some target, you'll make pions, let's say pi plus. Those will decay a large fraction of the time to mu plus and nu mu bar. And so, therefore, I've created a beam of nu mu bars. Oh, crap. There's no bar, just nu mu. So now if you create this, you can look at how the nu mu propagates as it travels through space. And the issue is that if these states acquire mass and the mass matrix is not diagonal in the flavor basis, then the mass eigenstates will actually be an admixture of the different flavor states. Or vice versa, the flavor states will be an admixture of the mass eigenstates. So the admixture is just defined in terms of the PM and S matrix, and the coefficients are just as follows. So nu mu is the 2, and then I have a 1 for the mass eigenstate 1, u 2 2 for mass eigenstate 2, and u 2 3 for mass eigenstate 3. So when I create this state, it'll be a linear combination of the different mass eigenstates. The different mass eigenstates will then propagate differently with their own phases. So each mass eigenstate propagates or evolves in time with its own factor of e to the minus I, the energy, times time. And because now all of these phases are oscillating at a different rate, if I measure the flavor content of the beam at some later time, then it's going to change and be a different linear combination. So there's some probability for it to change into, for example, a new E or a new tau. Okay, there's lots more I could say in that, but we'll keep going. So the second important consequence of neutrino masses is a phenomenon called neutrinoless double beta decay. Or zero nu beta beta. This is only if neutrinos are Majorana. And so here's what's going on. The idea is that you start with a nucleus with n neutrons and Z protons, and then it will decay into a nucleus with n minus 2 neutrons, Z plus 2 protons, and in addition to two electrons. Sorry. Okay. So this process conserves baryon number. It conserves electric charge. But the thing, of course, that it violates is lepton number. And so it takes advantage of the fact that lepton number is violated by Majorana masses for neutrinos. Right? Once you have a Majorana fermion, it can't carry any conserved charge. So the Feynman diagram is supposed to look like this. So let's say we start with a neutron, U, D, D. And okay, like this. And then it goes to a proton, UDU. And similarly, I have the same over down here. DU, and it goes to UDU through the following diagram. These are W's. And then this is an electron coming out. This is an electron coming out. And then I have neutrinos going like this. And so because the neutrino is a Majorana on a fermion, I can have these propagators which have these clashing arrows, like so, okay? Because lepton number is no longer conserved. Okay, so and another way to think about it is this diagram relies upon having an assertion of the Majorana mass here. Okay, so here's the diagram. It relies on neutrinos violating total lepton number. Okay. So this is really the smoking gun for Majorana neutrinos. You want to observe a radioactive decay in which you produce two electrons, but you don't produce the corresponding neutrinos. So people are searching for that. They haven't found anything yet. So there's another way to think about neutrino masses. I motivated thinking about the seesaw type mechanism at which the heavy neutrino state is very, very heavy compared to typical scales of the standard model, which naturally generates a very light neutrino. I could also think about this in effective operator language, where I just integrate out the heavy right-handed neutrino state. So let's think about this as an effective operator. And I'm just going to focus on one flavor for simplicity. So at scales which are at energy scales much, much less than the mass of this heavy state, I can just integrate out the N fields. So I don't need to talk about writing down a mass matrix and diagonalizing it. I can just write down an operator, an effective operator, for a Majorana neutrino mass for the left-handed fields that are left over. So the operator is as follows. So there's some scale here in the denominator because it's going to be dimension 5. And the 2 is just a convention. And the operator I want to write down is L bar conjugate. So this is the left-handed lepton fields, charge conjugated, and then barred. And then I need the epsilon acting on SU2 contracted with a Higgs. And then I have the Higgs transpose, an epsilon, and then another left-handed lepton field. So like so, plus emission conjugate. And if I put in the Higgs vacuum expectation value, actually I don't need this factor of 2. Sorry about that. I put in the Higgs vacuum expectation value, and this whole thing goes to minus 1 over 2 lambda times v squared. And then I have new left charge conjugated bar, new left plus Hermitian conjugate. So this operator generates the Majorana, same Majorana mass term for the left-handed fields that I got through the seesaw mechanism. So the Majorana mass is m nu, which in this language is just v squared over lambda. So if I want to match this onto the theory where I put in the n field as a degree of freedom, then I would say that this 1 over lambda was just equal to y squared over the mass of this field. Okay? And I can think about this also in Feynman diagram language. So the diagram that I'm integrating out to generate this operator is as follows. So I would have the Higgs fields and then the lepton fields. And then I have my right-handed neutrino and then another Higgs field. Like this. Okay, so this is the diagram that you can compute to generate exactly this coefficient to this operator. The way it goes is, okay, each coupling here is a factor of the Yukawa coupling Y. When the Higgs gets a VEV, this is V over square root 2. And for the propagator, I can think about it in sort of a mass insertion language. Each propagator gives you like a factor of 1 over m. And I need to insert the Majorana mass to violate lepton number, which is just another factor of m. So the whole thing is exactly what I claimed. It's like y squared v squared over m, which is the neutrino mass. But now that I've written down this effective operator, this dimension 5 operator, I have a more general way of thinking about neutrino masses. All right? They don't necessarily have to come from these right-handed neutrino fields. They could come from other types of fields as well. And we'll see different examples in a moment. But actually, it's very nice to think about this particular operator. I guess it's behind here. So the operator is dimension 5. This is actually the only dimension 5 operator you can write down consistent with the gauge symmetries of the standard model. So from an effective field theory point of view, this is actually the leading place in which you'd expect new physics to show up. So if new physics shows up suppressed by powers of 1 over lambda, where lambda is the scale of new physics, you'd expect the lowest dimensional operators to be the ones discovered first. And so it's very nice that, in fact, neutrino masses were perhaps the first indication of going beyond the standard model and extending it by non-renormalizable operators. So I want to talk also about other mechanisms. For generating neutrino masses. All I need to do is generate that operator. So anything I write down that generates that operator is successful. I don't need to introduce the right-handed neutrino fields necessarily. So the one that we considered so far is called the type 1 seesaw, where you introduce the field N, which is a fermion carrying quantum numbers 1, 1, 0 under the standard model, i.e. it's a singlet. When I write it like this, I just mean that the field N carries these quantum numbers under SU3 color, SU2 left, and U1 hypercharge. But there's other types of seesaws. There's something called the type 2 seesaw, where I introduce a field denoted by T. And T is a scalar field that carries the following quantum numbers. It'll be a singlet under color, but a triplet under SU2 left, and then it will carry a hypercharge 1, and it's going to be a scalar. And so if I expand out the SU3 triplet, in terms of the SU3 triplet components, there's a doubly charged state, a charged state, and a neutral state, like so. Okay, and they don't need to get a VEV, so nothing's getting a VEV here. And I'm just using the fact that the electric charge is equal to T3 plus Y. So T3 is 1, 0, minus 1, and Y is equal to 1 for all of them. OK, so how does this generate a neutrino mass? Well, I just have to write down the corresponding diagram that will generate that operator. The diagram looks like this. I have my Higgs fields interacting through the triplet. And then the triplet can couple to the two lepton fields, like so. So the triplet should be going like this. All right, so let's put in the couplings. So this is a triscalar coupling. It's a cubic term in the Lagrangian. It will have, the coupling should have dimensions of mass. And so I'm going to call this coupling mu, just to remind you that it has an explicit mass dimension as units of GeV. This is going to be a Yukawa coupling, coupling these two doublets to an SU2 triplet. And so I'll just call that Yukawa coupling Y. And then the propagator will introduce a factor of 1 over mt squared, since it's a scalar. So these will generate a neutrino mass of y times mu divided by mt squared. And then I should set the Higgs equal to its VEV, like so. So it's just a different expression for the neutrino mass.
So there is also coupling between this T and the photon?
In the photon, yeah, that's right. Couples to the photon. What are the experimental limits?
No, I mean like a loop diagram.
A loop diagram.
I mean, how is the diagram that shows the coupling between T and
photon? So it's very simple. So it carries the states that carry electric charge will interact with the photon through the electric charge.
But we don't see it.
We don't see it. So it just means that T has to be sufficiently heavy. It's definitely not stable, because you can see it will decay into either leptons or Higgs bosons, depending on the mass. Okay, so it's not stable. And it has to be heavy to evade detection. It's been searched for, so it must be heavier than at least 100 GeV or a few hundred GeV. I'm not sure exactly what the limits are right now. But so yeah. Oops. Okay, so then the last model is called the type three seesaw. And this involves a triplet state again. It's a fermionic triplet with no hypercharge. So it's a singlet under color, a triplet under SE2 left, neutral under hypercharge, and it's a fermion. So if I write out its components, it's sigma plus, sigma zero, and sigma minus, where now these are the electric charges of the states. And so the diagram looks as follows. So I have the Higgs, I have the lepton, and the Higgs. And this is the sigma in the middle. And one of its mass terms will violate, it has a Majorana on a mass because it's a real fermion. Now, this will work very similar to the case of the right-handed neutrino, the type 1 seesaw. And so the mass will just be y squared v squared over the mass of this sigma. OK, so these are the three seesaw mechanisms which are allowed at tree level. These are the only possibilities you can write down. At one loop level, there's more possibilities for generating neutrino masses through new heavier states, and you could even go and consider higher loops as well. But the punchline I want to make is that provided all of these states are heavy, they're all seesaws, they all will generate the same dimension 5 operator, right? Same operator that I wrote down up there. And so it's not quite fair just to focus on the case where I just introduced the right-handed neutrino fields, because I don't really know that that's fundamentally the mechanism that generates the neutrino masses. OK. All right, so I spend a lot of time on neutrino masses, and so I'm going to go through some of the other things very briefly. So another question or problem with the standard model is, what is the origin of flavor? So there's different sub-questions to this question. Why three generations? Why a large hierarchy between the different fermion masses, or effectively the different Yukawa couplings? So the electron Yukawa coupling is around 3 times 10 to the minus 6, and the top Yukawa coupling is around 1. So why are some Yukawa couplings small and why are some large? We don't know. Another question is, why are the CKM and P, M, and S matrices so different? And so I'm going to just write down the magnitude of all of the entries in the CKM matrix. So removing the phase and the sign, 0.97, 0.23, 0.004, 0.23, 0.97, 0.04, 0.009, 0.04, 0.999. All right, so the CKM matrix looks very close to being diagonal. The farther you go, or I should say close to being the identity, closely aligned with the identity, the farther you go off diagonal, the smaller the entries get. And in contrast, the P, M, and S matrix, if I just take the magnitudes, 0.82, 0.54, 0.15, 0.35, 0.70, 0.62, 0.44, 0.45, 0.77. So it doesn't seem to have the same structure, all right? If I just picked out 9 numbers between 0 and 1, I'd probably get something that looks like this. So this may signal something called anarchy. Not everyone thinks that this is due to anarchy. People have tried to read the tea leaves for these numbers, and it may not be anarchy, but to me it looks like anarchy. All right? So it just looks like random numbers. This one looks like there's a lot of structure. Not a lot of structure, a simple structure. Okay, so that's the flavor puzzle. Third question is, why are there 3 different gauge groups? So why do we have SU3 color, SU2 left, and SU1 hypercharge? Why not just one group? Another related question is, why does SU2 left cross U1Y violate parity? Another question. These all go under the category of unification. Can quarks and leptons be unified into common representations another related question is, why do fermions have ad hoc hypercharges? We seem like we just picked the hypercharges out of a hat, but everything has to work exactly as I wrote down, or else bad things happen. Why is that the case? So there's different explanations, or I should say there are different models to explain how these different things arise, which all go under the name of grand unified theories. So let me just consider a few simple grand unified theories. The simplest one is called the Patti Salam model. And the basic idea of this model is that lepton number is now the 4th color. Okay, so SU3 is now going to an SU4, and lepton number is the 4th color. So here's how the theory works. The gauge symmetry is SU4, which will contain color, cross SU2 left, which is the same SU2 left as the standard model, cross SU2 right. So in terms of simplifying the group structure, we haven't really accomplished very much. All right? So it doesn't really explain this part. Why does it violate parity? Well, we've restored parity in some sense, because now we have an SU2 for left, and we have an SU2 for right, and parity can be spontaneously broken. So it explains that. The best feature about the Patti Salam model is that it explains this question. Can quarks and leptons be unified together into a common representation? And also, why do fermions have the ad hoc hypercharges that they do? Okay, so that's also explained. So the fermions are contained in representations, which are denoted by psi left, which is a fundamental under the SU4, a fundamental under the SU2, and a singlet under SU2 right. In this field, can be expressed as follows. So the 4 I'll write as a vector in this direction, and the 2 I'll write as a vector in this direction. Okay? So I'll have u left, d left, u left, d left, u left, d left, and then nu left, e left. So this is the SU2 part here. The SU4 contains color as the upper 3x3 block. So that's why I just copied the same thing 3 times. These are states of different color. So I should write the color index R, G, B for all of those states, like so, okay? So color is just acting on the upper 3x3 block, and then lepton number is the 4th component. And then similarly, I can define the right-handed fields, which is a fundamental under SU4, a singlet under SU2 left, and then a fundamental under SU2 right. And it's exactly the same thing. So it's the same as psi left, just with left goes to right. OK, so now you have to worry about how does this breaking of this symmetry reduce to the standard model? Well, so you have to put in a more complicated Higgs sector, which breaks the SU4 cross SU2 cross SU2 to the standard model SU3 cross SU2 cross U1. So you have extra, more complicated Higgs sector. So there's the SU4 cross SU2 left cross SU2 right, which through the extra Higgses gets broken down to SU3 color cross SU2 left cross U1 hypercharge. And this also breaks parity spontaneously. And then, of course, this, just through the standard model Higgs, gets broken down to SU3 color and then U1 of electromagnetism. Okay? But the nice thing that happens when you start from this theory is it predicts what are the U1 hypercharge quantum numbers in terms of the quantum numbers under this symmetry. And because you're starting with a non-abelian symmetry, you can't choose the quantum numbers in an ad hoc way. They're fully defined in terms of the representations that you start with. So what happens is the hypercharge, the U1y quantum numbers that we want just emerge as linear combinations of the SU4 and SU2 right generators. Okay. So it explains some nice features that we want, but it doesn't explain how we still have 3 gauge groups. Now, if you want to try to unify the gauge groups so that you have fewer gauge symmetries, you have to go to more complicated models. So there's the Georgi and Glashow SU5 model. And so now all of the gauge symmetries in the standard model are embedded in the SU5 symmetry. Okay? And I think you all did a homework problem seeing how the different fermions are embedded in different representations of the symmetry. So, but you need to have 2 representations. A 5 bar and a 10 contain one generation of the standard model. And again, you need a more complicated Higgs sector. Again, you have to break the SU5 down to SU3 cross SU2 cross U1, and then you need the standard model Higgs to break that down to color and electromagnetism. But we still have two different representations. Okay, so why do we have both of these? Well, there's an even more complicated type of model due to Georgi, based on a different theory called SO10. So in this theory, first of all, the SO10 contains SE3 color cross SE2 left cross U1 Y. And all the fermions of the standard model, plus the right-handed neutrino fields for one generation, are all in one representation, which is a 16-dimensional representation of SO10. So this, in a sense, is one of the most maximal ways you can unify everything together. We've unified all of the gauge groups into just one group. We've unified all of the fermions into just one representation. It's just a more general case to either SU5 or the Patti-Salam model. So you can actually break SO10 first down to SU5, and then it gets broken down to the standard model. Or you can break it down to the Patti-Salam model, SU4 cross SU2 cross SU2, and then break that down to the standard model. So if you like, you could think about SU5 and the Patti-Salam model as being subgroups of SO10. So before I've made firm believers out of in unification out of all of you, I want to discuss my objections to unification. It seems like we're simplifying things, but really the devil's in the details. I just want to make a little cartoon here. So I want to plot the Higgs sector versus the gauge sector. And the axes are going to be simple and complicated. So the standard model has a very complicated gauge sector, but the Higgs sector is extraordinarily simple and explains many nice phenomenologically viable features, such as the absence of flavor-changing neutral currents. So it would lie down somewhere around here. The Patti-Salam model is slightly simpler in terms of the gauge sector. Remember, we've unified the hypercharges, or explained the hypercharges. So, but at the expense of requiring additional Higgs states to break the new symmetry down to the standard model symmetry. SU5 is a simpler gauge sector, but still it involves a more complicated Higgs sector. And then SO10 is perhaps one of the simplest in terms of the gauge sector. We only have one representation to worry about for the fermions, but the Higgs sector is very, very complicated. So when we try to simplify everything, it seems like there's a conservation law in play, the conservation of complexity in terms of our model. So unfortunately, that's the situation. I should mention the experimental signatures of many of these models is proton decay. That's the smoking gun of unification, because as soon as we put quarks and leptons in a single representation, then we need to have gauge bosons that connect those different components in the representation. So if we can convert quarks into leptons, we're violating baryon number. We can have proton decay. OK, so let me end here. I was going to mention also one other thing called the hierarchy problem. But I think if you take the Beyond the Standard Model course, you'll hear all about the hierarchy problem, and you'll be sick of the hierarchy problem. So I won't spoil it for you now. So that's it.